Well, the temperature is dropping, and so seems to be the sanity of people around the country. And we're going to talk about it next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Thanks, Barry. It's great to be back with you on this very cold day. We're recording a show, of course, for the 2nd of February.
For Groundhog Day.
For Groundhog Day, that's right.
And I'll guarantee you, Chuck, that Punxsutawney Phil or Buckeye Chuck or whoever is going to see a shadow, because we are going to have six more weeks of winter, regardless of what happens.
It's cold, but we can take it. And what's strange is, Barry, I don't know but what it's supposed to be there, but on Monday it's supposed to be 57 degrees here.
I think that's what we're looking at for the weekend is like near 60.
Yeah. A strong warming trend, let's say. Now, I've run into some weird stuff here. To tell you what I've been, I have a U.S. stove, what they call a hot blast stove, and what it is, okay. it's a stove that'll burn either wood or coal, and it's in my basement, and we feed it into the furnace system as an add-on, and it heats the whole lower level, but it does not heat the whole upper level, but it does contribute greatly to the heat up there. Okay. So what it does is it saves me a bunch of money on propane, which, as you know, is not cheap, especially in January, February. Well, okay, I was buying coal. I've learned how to use it as a coal stove, and it is different than use it as a wood stove. So I went. I've been buying it at a local farm supply store. And if the initials TSC mean anything, I'll tell you right up front. I was buying my coal and bags from Tractor Supply Company.
Sure.
A familiar place for those of you who have rural stuff and you need to get something, you go into Tractor Supply or Rural King, which we have also in Heath. In any case, I went in there on January the 28th, before the onslaught of this minus 6 degree thing, thinking I was going to stock up on coal, some good old anthracite to keep the stove burning, because I'm getting low on wood due to the wetness. I couldn't get down into my area where all my wood's cut. My tractor wouldn't come back up the hill, and you know, it's too muddy. And well, in any case, I go to Tractor Supply. Are you guys out of coal? Yes. Okay. Well, when are you getting some more? We're not. Next fall. You sell wood stove. You sell coal stoves, right? Yes. Why are you not handling coal through the rest of the heating season? Because we all know it's 8 more weeks. 8 to 12 more weeks of heating, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, it's a seasonal item. and corporate decided that we weren't going to have any more coal. Seriously? Okay, they're putting their spring stuff out. I go, okay, if this was March and you told me you weren't going to have any more coal, I'd throw my hands up and I'd say, waited too long. It's January the 28th and it's going to be minus 7 degrees in a couple of days. And you know what they say? We know somebody at corporate made the decision.
Yeah.
Isn't that the way of the world? Some bean counter decided it was more important to get the spring stuff out that nobody's going to buy yet. You know, we're all going to wait until the end of February, beginning of March to start buying that stuff, unless it's on special, which it won't be. It'll be at a premium for now, because why? They think they're going to get everybody to jump the gun and get it. Look, I need coal. So it's turning out that finding more coal is a real chore. I found a couple places where I can buy lump coal, but I'm actually getting ready to go out and buy a couple of truckloads of wood, just to keep things going until the end of March. But that's the way of the world, Barry. It's the silliness that we see out there. It's bad decisions based on very poor reasoning. And once the decisions based on poor reasoning are made, then you have to build the foundation under the reasoning. Rather than starting out with a firm foundation, you find out your facade is crumbling, so what do? You got to repair it. Well, that's a lot more work, and it's a lot less satisfactory. But that's the way of the world, and that's exactly what we're going to be dealing with today.
And folks, just a pre-engagement warning here. Some of the topics that we're going to be talking about today are very disturbing. We are going to try not to go into great, gross, and graphic details, but these are not pleasant things to talk about. And so, fair warning ahead of time, if your system is too sensitive to deal with what's going on in our culture right now, I suggest you find someplace else to be for the next hour. If not, then you've been given fair warning that the things that we're going to be talking about are probably going to be very disturbing and distasteful. So, given that, Chuck, here we go.
Yep.
The big national news story right now is not the economy. It is not whether or not we have a border wall. It really isn't the government shutdown, the temporary reopening of government, nor is it even the pay raise that was voted by the Democrats in the House for federal government employees. So, you know, let that marinate in the back of your head. The people who were on furlough because of the shutdown, who will be receiving back pay and all in one lump sum, are also in line if the Senate acts, which they may or may not, and the president doesn't necessarily, you know, shoot it down with a veto, that they're going to give them a pay raise. So, that's not even the main news item out there today. The main news item, and this is one, Chuck, that you and I have talked about this before. And let me just ask you, and I'm sure some of our listeners remember this, but I know you remember it. What is my first maxim of politics?
Oh, this one's very easy, because you first told me this about 15 years ago, maybe longer. Uh-huh. Maybe longer, maybe 16 or 17 years ago. The left always outruns its cover, or, as you said, gets ahead of its headlights.
That's right, yeah. The left always outrun their cover. The left always outrun their cover. They push too far, too fast, and it invites a retaliatory response. It invites the pushback. Well, there it looks, Chuck, I'm guessing that the pushback may actually be quite impressive in some ways.
Let's hope.
I'm guessing that in some areas it's going to be like a resigned shrug and a rolling over into a fetal position for many politicians who don't want to be bothered by the issue. And the issue I'm talking about, Chuck, is the issue of abortion. That's the big news story of the week, ladies and gentlemen, because the New York State Legislature this last week, controlled by leftist socialist Democrats, think about it, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a product of the New York system. Many legislators, now again, not all of them, so because there were many legislators who stood up, and if you go to places like Facebook and YouTube and other places, as long as they haven't been taken down, you can look and find the floor speeches from pro-life delegates who saw what was coming and honestly didn't have the votes to stop it.
To be fair, I'm guessing that there were several Democrats in that particular.
There may have been a handful of Democrats as well, and I'm not saying that everybody who stood up was a Republican, because I'm sure there were a number of Republicans who voted right along with the majority.
I wouldn't surprise me.
And the New York State Assembly passed legislation which was gleefully signed by Governor Andrew Cuomo, himself a progressive socialist leftist, that basically legalized abortion up to birth. Yeah, you heard that right, ladies and gentlemen. The New York State Assembly has now passed and I don't even want to call it a law, Chuck, because anything that violates the word of God is not law.
Right.
from a holistic perspective, folks, from a biblical worldview perspective, and from a reality check perspective, any constructive man that they arrogate themselves the power to determine who lives and who dies in this way is no law. It violates the revealed word of God. But Cuomo signed this, the New York legislature passed it, and it's a bill that basically secures access to abortion through all three trimesters. Now, some people who may not be understanding what's happening throw their hands up in dismay and wail and gnash teeth that we're losing and that the devil is winning and that the end of all civilization as we know it is coming because of this. Now, I will say, first and foremost, Chuck, this is a heinous, abhorrent, abominable act by those who voted in favor of this policy. It is a heinous and barbaric and evil act that Governor Andrew Cuomo signed this bill. But we still have to look to God's word, who says in the book of Romans, in Romans 8, verse 28, that all things work together for the good to those who love God and who are called according to his purpose. Why did the New York legislature all of a sudden in 2019 explode into this paroxysm of reactionary action to move this breathtakingly broad piece of legislation and try to put it into law? Is it that they think that it's going to improve the economy in New York, Chuck?
No, Barry. You and I both know why this happened.
Well, I know exactly why it happened. I just let's talk through it here a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, because there are a number of reasons people could give. Were there polls taken that showed that the vast majority of voters in the state of New York decided that, you know, they just needed to have complete and utter total access to infanticide, to baby killing? No, those polls weren't there. Was it that there was online petitions that came in with hundreds of thousands of signatures? No, that didn't happen. Was it that they were lobbied very hard by abortion-minded groups like Planned Parenthood and others who said, you know, if you pass this law, then we'll come and build these huge facilities in your state and we'll hire lots of people, a la the Amazon deal?
Nope.
Didn't happen that way. Okay, Chuck, why do you think this action took place?
The Senate confirmed Brett Kavanaugh to be an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court.
That was the precursor. You're right. Okay, you're right. In great respect, that's a big part of it. But another big part of it is Neil Gorsuch being approved to the Supreme Court as well.
Yeah.
But the major part of this whole spur to action of the New York Assembly is the fact that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has not been seen or heard from in the last 2 weeks.
Well, that's part and parcel of what I just...
What you just said. Yeah, exactly. It's part and parcel of it because the leftist, progressive, pro-death politicians and their ilk with NARAL and Planned Parenthood and the ACLU all understand the deep import of what's about to happen.
Yes.
What is about to happen is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, most likely, unless God tarries, which he can, most likely may be seeing her last days on the court coming to a close sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And I say last days on the court because she doesn't have to die in order to be removed from the court. It can be that she's incapacitated to where she can't do her job.
Or you can retire like David Souter.
And retire like Souter. Yes, exactly.
So they understand
the balance of power is about to shift because they gave it their best shot. I mean, you were absolutely right, Chuck. Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed. That was their best shot to skew the process in order to get another, oh, I don't know, Sandra Day O'Connor, Anthony Kennedy, David Souter, you know, milquetoast jurists who would swing to the left when they were pushed hard enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
What they are getting instead, and I got a pushback from somebody the other day on this about Kavanaugh siding with the majority not to refer this one case that was coming up regarding defunding Planned Parenthood from Medicaid. But I told that person, I said, no. I said, you need to go back and read the framework of that case. The attorneys argued a different point. Even Clarence Thomas said this case is not about abortion.
Yeah.
And the point is that that's what you're after.
Okay.
That is a case that will strike at the heart of abortion, which they didn't get.
That's the problem that you get run into when you listen to the news media, what the news media is telling you a case is all about. You can't do that. You actually have to go in and go down a couple of layers and read some of the analysis for yourself of what the legal experts are saying, because the news media will flat out just look, it's fake news. They'll lie. They want you to think that the Supreme Court couldn't bring itself to vote to ban abortion, blah blah blah. It's not what it was about at all. And that's why you have to be very careful with what you're being told by the news media. They will lie. They will mislead. Why? Because they desperately want what they're telling you to be true. And in some cases, they're trying to gin up one kind of reaction or another one.
True.
So yes. That's part of what's going on there. By the way, I just real quick, another one of the reasons that a proverb came to mind. When you were talking about giving your biblical reference, I'll give you one. Proverbs 21:1, the king's heart is a waterway in the hands of the Lord, as the rivers of water. Where basically the heart of the king is in the hands of the Lord, and he may direct it in any way he chooses. One of the reasons we have this issue is because God is allowing our elected officials to do this. Why? Well, as a judgment. This is a judgment on us as a nation. Now, people may say, well, how's it a judgment to allow all these babies to be slaughtered up to the point of birth? And actually, the governor of Virginia, I think you were probably going to get to this, the governor of Virginia kind of made it clear that he essentially... if you read his explanation, he was essentially talking about infanticide.
Well, let's roll back just a little bit on that, because Nick said New York passed this, and Cuomo basically thumbed his nose at everybody, basically pro-lifers in New York.
Yeah.
The church, you know, the bishop, he's Catholic, so the bishop in New York is talking about, although they'll never pull the trigger on this, excommunication.
That's exactly my point.
Every
legislator that is a Roman Catholic, and the governor who's a Roman Catholic, should be excommunicated. And mm-hmm. they won't do it. Why? Politics and money. Sad to say. Politics and money.
Exactly. So basically what you're at there is, in New York, they're doing this push. What they're doing this push because... Donald Trump is president.
Bingo.
Because Donald Trump has already put two new people on the United States Supreme Court, both of whom, if you look at their past histories, are going to argue and probably vote in favor of pro-life positions and pro-life legislation when it's presented to them in a way that they're getting at the heart of the issue and not some sidebar issue that's what happened with this previous case about Medicaid funding. Because the question was, can a partner in a joint venture unilaterally change the terms of the agreement? I.e., can the states independently decertify organizations based on the fact that their policy doesn't like funding abortion. And the justices refused to hear that because that's not a case that it's going to strike at the heart of this thing.
Right.
Well, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg resigns, or is called to her eternal reward or punishment, whatever the case
whichever
may be,
the case, yeah.
Looking at her history, it's probably punishment. Then Donald Trump, in his first term as president of the United States, will get the chance to appoint justice number three, which, in pretty much everyone's estimation, is going to be a lady by the name of Amy Comey Barrett, who happens to be a faithful Catholic pro-life jurist. How are you going now? And again, since she would be female as well, how is the left going to demagogue her? Because are they going to use sexual harassment, or are they going to use the fact that she's Catholic, which they've tried to float already?
Yes,
on some nominees to the federal district and circuit courts. I think Mazie Hirono from Hawaii and I forget who else it was. Oh, no, it was Kamala Harris.
Yes.
From California, who's just announced she's running for president in 2020, by the way.
The Knights of Columbus
Basically, both went at some of these nominees for the federal benches because of their affiliation with the Knights of Columbus, which is a Catholic social organization.
Yeah.
They were basically saying, yet this qualifies you from sitting on the federal bench if you're Catholic or if you express a religious viewpoint. They're trying to set this up because they know who's coming next. Everybody knows that, unless you miss your guess and unless Trump has an aneurysm and just goes crazy, and some people think he has, but we don't. Amy Comey Barrett's going to be the next nominee to the United States Supreme Court, and if she makes it to the court, abortion and Roe v. Wade
is done.
Is likely seeing its final days as a policy in this country. So what's happening is New York is leading, and of course Rhode Island is now talking about legalizing partial birth abortion, and in the state of Virginia, a Democrat, I think a freshman Democrat delegate, introduced a bill that would allow abortion access unfettered all the way up to the point of delivery.
Yeah.
Now no, that, and because people usually when people say up to birth, they're not actually saying while the birth is taking place, you can kill the baby. But that's what this delegate said,
yes.
Because she was asked specifically on point on the floor. There's a video of it, of whether or not her bill would allow an abortion should a woman be, quote unquote, obviously giving birth, which means, I'm assuming, water broke, contractions starting, labor happening, cervix dilating, the whole nine yards. And she said, absolutely yes.
This was a delegate named Kathy Tran.
Tran, yes. But then it got worse, Chuck.
It did, yeah. It did.
Because after Tran put this out here, her colleague, newly elected Democrat governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, who took over for Terry McAuliffe, so they just really basically passed the position down to another Democrat, came out publicly and stated that in his estimation, this would, and the way he looked at this bill, that he thought it would be perfectly okay that if a parent or parents have a child, then they should have some time in order to figure out what they want to do with the child and consult with the physicians and everything else. In other words, he's basically saying post-birth abortion is okay with him. We have a name for that, I think, in federal law. It's called infanticide. Should be applied pre-birth, but it's infanticide. But here is Ralph Northam, who obviously is a spiritual and philosophical, if not psychological, heir of a philosopher by the name of Peter Singer.
Yeah.
Who happens to have a chairmanship in philosophy at Princeton University. Where's Princeton located, Chuck?
New Jersey.
Yeah, right next door to New York, where Peter Singer, and we've talked about this in this program a lot, advocates that parents should be able to terminate their offspring at least up until they have the ability to have self-awareness and self-consciousness.
Two,
and when you push him, he's talking like 2 or 3 years old.
2 years old. I think they're off on their time. So I have a 16-month-old granddaughter who's fully aware of who she is.
Yeah.
Since her favorite word is me.
Yeah, but you got to understand that Peter Singer, the philosopher, is an evolutionary philosopher.
Yes.
And so what he's doing is he's looking at what happens in the wild, in nature, and with like lion prides and others, where, you know, the parents of Chuck can sometimes, because, well, they can't feed the child, or can't feed the cub, or the cub can't learn something, or the cub is injured or wounded or misformed, let the parents kill it. Well, that's because lions and tigers and bears, oh my,
yeah,
don't have moral codes. They don't have souls. They don't have consciousnesses that have to make higher order decision makings about good and evil.
They don't have the word of God to set the standard.
Exactly. According to Peter Singer, that's the way we should be as well. Ralph Northam and Andrew Cuomo and some of these legislators, they fully agree with that philosophy.
No.
Well, that's just because I'm getting loud and I'm sticking my mouth right on the microphone.
It's important for you to get excited because this is something to get excited about. If you're not excited, let me give you a quote from Northam, Dr. Ralph Northam, a pediatrician. Dr. Ralph Northam is a pediatrician.
That's Governor Ralph Northam, who's Dr. Ralph Northam, who is a pediatric neurologist.
Yeah. Here's what he says. Quote, if a mother is in labor, the infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired, and then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
You notice he didn't say between the physicians and the parents.
Right.
All right, here we go again. The father of the child has no rights.
Well,
this is the insanity of the left, Chuck. This is the total insanity of the left. They are well outrunning their cover right now, and honestly, I am praising God for it because it is igniting the pro-life base.
Bingo.
To understand that now is the time to move. Now is the time to stand up and be counted. Now is the time to stand for what God's word gives us clearly as defending the defenseless, as respecting and honoring life in all of its forms, and in protecting children from the moment of conception. I think the time is great right now, Chuck, for us to be introducing, and they're getting right. You know, we're talking about the heartbeat, but we've talked about it a little bit before. And yes, it's going to get introduced next week in the House, in the Senate, and it's going to go through the Ohio legislature, and it'll probably pass. And the governor said he'll sign it multiple times, and he probably will. But I know that right on the heels of it, that some of the reps are looking at introducing life at conception, just like they did last session, which basically is going to go the other direction and say Ohio will be a state that will be abortion free.
Now, let's talk about that for a second, because we've talked about the Supreme Court and what they will do with if they Trump gets a third appointment, and it's Kathy Comey. Amy Comey Barrett. I don't know why Kathy came in. Amy Comey Barrett. Here's what will happen. Abortion legalization will be turned back to the states where it was always before 1973. In other words, New York and I think Colorado had pro-abortion laws on the books before 1973.
Yes, they did.
The argument in Roe v. Wade was that it wasn't fair that a woman from, say, Oklahoma had to travel to Colorado to get an abortion, and a woman from Ohio had to travel to New York to get an abortion. They made the claim that this violated the 14th Amendment. equal protection under the
equal
law.
Equal protection clause, that's right, yeah.
And therefore, the argument is so awful. The umbras and penumbras argument. I'm trying to remember which justice it was that basically said, you know, the science isn't fully settled on this, which was nonsense. In 1973, it was fully settled. But once we figured out when life actually begins, then we may have to revisit this. Well, we know when life begins. It begins at conception because it doesn't matter how many cells you have. You are an individual human being. You know, do you have a brain? Do you have arms and legs? Do you have a heart? Well, at the 1 and 2 and 8 cell stage and blastocele and all these other stages up until you develop those things, the answer is no, but you're still a human being. What else would you become? You can't go back and rely on bad science from the 19th century, which was Ernst Haeckel's drawings, the evolutionary showing that fetuses all go through the evolutionary stages, which all turned out to be a fraud. And yet, in the 80s, when I was at Ohio State University, we still had books with Ernst Haeckel's drawings in them.
Yeah, we did.
Now, that being said, what's going to happen? It'll go back to the states. Where will Ohio be if we pass one of these things with essentially a conception ban? There won't be any abortions here.
Won't be any abortions in Ohio.
And New York? Well, in New York, you'll be able to go and have anything done right up until the moment that the head starts to come out. In fact, probably right up to the moment before the feet exit the birth canal, you'll be able to kill that baby. Why? It's not fully born yet. Now, luckily, Barry, or should I say blessedly, there is no luck, there's only blessing. Blessedly, that Virginia law, that attempt at a Virginia law, that died the cruel death it deserved. Does that mean it won't come back? No. And by the way, Kathy Tran, who the delegate from Virginia who entered this thing, on the same day entered a bill to protect the lives of caterpillars. Now, what does that say to you? I'm willing to defend the lives of caterpillars, but not babies. What is wrong with this picture? Well, the answer is everything. There's no clear moral imperative to protect caterpillars. But infants? Absolutely. And in fact, God showed what he thought about infant sacrifice in the Old Testament. He abhorred it. He made sure that those who practice it suffer the consequences. And this is what this is, essentially. This is infant sacrifice. And again, I'm going to say, our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters out there, get out there and pressure these bishops and archbishops to excommunicate these people. I don't know how to make it any more clear.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, and that really gets down to it. But again, one of the things that individuals can do, and again, we don't want people to feel like there's nothing they can do because, well, this is New York or this is Virginia. I mean, yes, you can help. You can call for boycotts. You can, if you're faithful in the Catholic Church, you can call for the hierarchy of the church to do excommunications, etc. But what you can do right now is get active and getting your voice out there in backing legislation in your own home state, whether it's here in Ohio or other states, to defend life. I mean, we need to prepare just as much as the left is trying to prepare for the eventuality of a Ruth Bader Ginsburg leaving the court. We should be preparing for that as well. We should be, and in Ohio, we're trying to do that with the Life of Conception bill.
Exactly.
But you know what? You need to get people who stop saying, well, you know, yeah, but if the woman's health or, you know, da-da-da-da. In other words, it's the yeah, but choir that I want folks to like start rethinking that it's either we protect life or we don't. You either stand up for all of the defenseless unborn children or you don't.
There's no mushy middle.
You stand against things like assisted suicide at the late end of life or you don't. You know, you stand up for promoting the unborn as a human being and a person under law that is afforded all of the protections that our laws give to born human beings. Those are the things we need to do. And the only way we do that is, A, stay faithfully engaged with your elected officials who can make those laws happen, or B, if they choose to ignore you, turn a blind ear, or they become part of the yeah but choir, remove them from office.
That's the bottom line.
Find people in the district who have what it takes, i.e., you know, maybe they're a business person like Donald Trump. Maybe not as rich, but a business person like Donald Trump. Maybe they're a pastor or a faithful parishioner who volunteers or works at or runs a pro-life entity. Perhaps they're a young person who is showing that they understand what's happening to their generation and they're willing to speak out about it. And they're old enough to run for office.
Yeah,
we need to prepare the ground right now, Chuck. If we know the rain is coming and we refuse to prepare the ground, we are unfaithful stewards.
Exactly. This is something that I wanted to bring up today because it goes out to other things that we have been discussing offline. But the fact is that you look at this in Virginia and you go and talk to the average person in the street outside of the semicircle around D.C. and even there, and you talk to them about what the governor has said about abortion. And by the way, we know this to be the fact because he's crawfishing on this as fast as he can go. And if you don't know what I mean about crawfishing, how does a crawfish go into defensive mode?
He backs up.
He puts his pincers out and flails them wildly while he backs up, which is exactly what Governor Northam is doing. Now, that being said, you talk to the average person on the street and you ask them, they are outraged about this. And the answer, if you think about it, what did you ask him about abortion rights when he was running for office? And he probably answered those questions. You can't escape it in this day and age. He probably answered those questions and he probably answered them as a quote unquote squish moderate. The positions he is espousing is not a squish moderate position. It is an abortion radical. And that just goes to show you that there is no such thing as a squish moderate. You either are for life or against it. Now, if people had voted on that basis, would Northam be the governor?
No, absolutely not.
He would not. Had he pulled this in October, which, you know, he wasn't in power yet, but had he pulled this in October or made this clear in October of 2018, he would have
Virginia would have a Republican governor, most likely.
Overwhelmingly.
And they may have not have lost a congressional seat.
Exactly. Folks, you get what you pay for. You have to ask these questions while they're running. And you can't sit around and rely on the news media to tell you the truth. I'm willing to bet that that Northam, if you rely on the news media to tell you the truth, and I'm not just talking about the leftist media, I'm also talking about alternative media, because you have to be very careful about who you choose as your news source, because there's some real junk out there. I every once in a while I'll tune on to something with clickbait on YouTube and watch it, and I'm like, okay, you've stretched this story beyond the bounds of credibility. Okay, that being said, think about this thing. These guys, they voted for Northam supposedly as a counter to Trump. They were going to show Trump by electing this Democrat governor. They thought they were getting a guy who would, you know, expand Medicaid and do all that other stuff. What they got was a pro-abortion fanatic and probably a socialist. Had you known
it's
that...
what it's clearly coming to, yes.
This is what happens when you ignore pivotal issues as a driving force for your vote. This is what happens.
Absolutely.
This is how... I had to laugh. I saw an article, I think it was in the New York Times, and it talked about how Kasich started out as a Tea Party governor and ended, you know, started out Tea Party and ended up never Trump.
Right.
Kasich was never a Tea Party guy, ever.
Exactly. No, what he did was he saw the Tea Party movement forming and he figured out he could get in front of it and co-opt it in order to get into office.
And that's what he did. This is exactly what he did. Now, I don't want to get away from the abortion thing because it's important, but you and I have been talking about another issue.
Well, we're not getting away from it because, I mean, we're talking about Don Kasich. The man vetoed the heartbeat bill legislation twice.
Yes.
He vetoed it. Showing that he's okay with abortions too, as long as it doesn't go too far.
To be sad, to report the sad news, the reason he vetoed the fulcrum he used, the lever was the veto. The fulcrum he used was the support of Ohio Right to Life.
Yep.
To give him the support he needed to veto that bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, of course, now that we have a new governor who committed while he was running and after he became into office that he will sign this bill, all of a sudden that organization has now started doing a full court press on how that's their most important piece of legislation for them to pass is heartbeat.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing with the appropriate changes.
Well, again, I don't believe there really isn't. There aren't any changes that are going to be made on the bill because the legislative intent is we've passed this thing now twice. The governor's veto. We're going to pass it now that we got a governor who says he's going to give it to us. We're going to get it done.
Well, look, you and I, we're fully aware that there was a stand your ground legislation in the Ohio State House, and they gutted it by making it a duty to retreat.
Yeah, they switched it completely around. Yes,
and that's exactly what I expect to someone to try to amend it. Hopefully, Bill Coley he's gone, isn't he, or is he?
No, he's still there.
I don't know what his stance is on abortion, but if it's anything like his gun rights stance, it's worthless.
He voted in favor of the heartbeat bill when it was on the floor. But prior to that, Coley was arguing, and during the first iteration of this bill, actually had a precursor draft drafted for it that had rape and incest exceptions in the law. Now, has he changed in the last 8 years? I don't know. But he voted in favor of this without those exceptions in it. Knowing that full well that, again, that was where the lay of the land was going to be, he voted in favor of it.
Well, yeah. Because he was going to get buried if he didn't.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Talk about people, you know, politicians and whether they're going to stand up on this. I sent you a link. Hopefully you've got it by now. And I was hoping we might be able to play it. It's a short one. It's about 4 minutes long. And it's the President of the United States responding to Governor Ralph Northam's comments.
President Trump criticizing Virginia's governor for defending a proposed third trimester abortion bill.
If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
Well, Virginia's bill, which ultimately failed, comes after New York's own late-term abortion bill became a law. So are liberal states competing to be the biggest champions of pro-choice? Here to weigh in is RNC spokeswoman Kayleigh McEnany. Kayleigh, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Anytime, Heather.
So this is so troubling, and there was a huge outpouring of response on social media yesterday, really across the board. What do you make of what's happening?
You know, the right has predicted this for quite some time, that the logical endpoint of the radical left was infanticide. And we heard it straight from the mouth of the so-called moderate governor from Virginia, who is, in essence, a radical leftist by proposing this. This is very scary, Heather. And if morality doesn't convince the left that this is wrong, that it is wrong to kill a baby outside of the womb, then perhaps public polling will. And public polling indicates that 81%, Heather, 81%, think about that. It's hard to get 50% of this country to agree on anything, but 81% think abortion in the last 3 months is wrong.
Yeah.
So this, they're running afoul of the American people here, no doubt.
Let's take a look at this. This is another poll that questions whether abortion should be made available. 15% say that it should be available at any time during pregnancy, which in essence is what this does. 9% say the first 6 months, 27% the first 3 months, 28% only in certain cases, and then 10% only to save the life of a mother, and 10% say that it should never be permitted.
That's right. And, you know, just last week in the wake of New York's law, I was arguing with folks that look at, if you look on Cleveland Clinic's website, it says at 6 months, your baby coming out of the womb can live, can exist without the mother. We cannot abort babies at 6 months. Now we are arguing that you cannot abort them at 9 months, a fully developed human being with a heartbeat, with a personality, with the stamp of God on it. This is so, so sad, so horrifying that this is the point we're at in this country. And President Trump warned about this long ago.
Yeah, it was so horrifying that people were scratching their heads saying, we have to be reading this the wrong way. This can't possibly be what this says. But in fact, it does. You were mentioning Northam's response to the criticism. Here's what he said on Twitter. He said, I have devoted my life to caring for children, and any insinuation otherwise is shameful and disgusting. But then let's also talk about what President Trump said that you just referenced. This was during a debate in 2016 with Hillary Clinton. Listen.
If you go with what Hillary is saying, in the ninth month, you can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb of the mother just prior to the birth of the baby.
There you go. You're right. I mean, he was talking about it in 2016. He was elected president. This is yet another, issue that he ran on. He talked about. And then he's trying other people are now trying to block what people elected to be in office.
That's exactly right. President Trump warned about this, and the Democrats used to say back in the Clinton era in the 90s that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. But now it's always, often, and after the baby is even outside of the womb. And make no mistake, this happens more often than you think. National Review had a great piece up, a sad piece, that shows nearly 15,000 babies a year are aborted at this level, at this place in pregnancy, and it's more than all gun homicides in this country in total, many of them not because of the health of the mother. So this is not safe, legal, and rare. It is often.
Yeah, and this is something that should definitely be a bipartisan issue. People very upset about it from both sides of the aisle. Thank you so much, Kaylee. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Heather.
All right.
That's it. I'm gonna make one comment from a logical fallacy perspective. The governor's
sure.
attempt to defend himself by saying, I've been a pediatrician for years, and any
yes.
suggestion that I would do anything to harm the children and blah, blah, blah is repugnant or disgusting or, you know, some description like that. Okay, what did he just say? He said, recently born children aren't children.
Yes, that's exactly what he said.
He said, they're just sort of things, objects. That's what that statement says. Now, this guy is a real piece of work.
Yes.
I want to read an attempt to, when I said he crawfished. This is from an article in the National Review Online. We've been critical of National Review. They're on the right. They're on the side of the angels regarding the abortion question. They're sort of Roman Catholic in their perspective, as was William F. Buckley, the founder, and so it's not surprising. But they ran a story on this Virginia governor defends letting infants die, which is exactly what he did in that clip that you heard there, because he described what would happen. Here's an update to the story, 3:50 p.m. on January 30th. By 4 o'clock, the day of the interview, here's a quote. A spokesperson for Northam has released a statement appearing to walk back the Democratic governor's comments from this morning's appearance on WTOP, the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, no woman seeks a third trimester abortion except in the case of tragic or difficult circumstances, such as a non-viable pregnancy, or in the event of severe fetal abnormalities, and the governor's comments were limited to actions physicians would take in the event that a woman in those circumstances went into labor, unquote. The statement read in part, quote, attempts to extrapolate these comments otherwise is in bad faith and underscores exactly why the governor believes physicians and women, not legislators, should make these difficult and deeply personal medical decisions, unquote. The full statement can be found here and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Essentially, what he's saying there is, and he has essentially lied in subsequent interviews and said that if those decisions on third trimesters would require, as current Virginia law does, require three physicians to give opinions for a late term abortion, what he is lying about is the fact that Tran's bill, Kathy Tran, removes that requirement.
Yes, it does. It removes that requirement. Absolutely does.
He knows it, and he's lying.
Oh, of course he does.
Yeah. He knows it, and he's lying. Flat out, he is fully aware. So, folks, you get what you pay for. When you do a vote, when you vote for someone who's okay because he's okay on labor unions or blah, 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 but he's got this little problem with abortion, guess what you bought? You bought the abortion.
True. Absolutely.
The fact is,
there's no doubt about it. Now, you know, Chuck, you know, we listen to those clips, and of course, obviously, you know, Trump looks like a prophet during the debate with Clinton. He basically said, listen, if you follow this to its logical end, this is what you're talking about. Well, Ralph Northam just confirmed that Trump's smarter than most people want to give him credit for. He gets it. He understands where these things go to. I wanted to come back and talk a little bit about that little conversation between the news anchor and the representative from the RNC, because it was instructive and enlightening in a way that I'm not sure that they really picked up on. And I don't know, maybe you picked up on it, maybe you didn't.
You tell me, and I'll tell you whether I got it or not. Sure, sure. I'll be
Absolutely.
Honest, I promise.
Okay. You know, they put up that infographic of the poll and the support at different levels.
That didn't match the poll that they
quoting. It didn't match because that was the infographic that the RNC person was talking about. The other poll that the Fox News commentator was talking about, actually, I was listening to what she was saying while I'm looking at this, and it hit me. Because in that infographic, there was a point that if you looked at it, it said that 43% of the public support life at conception.
Yes.
Recognizing life from conception, right?
Yep.
43%. But if you listen to the other poll that she was talking about, only 10% of the people said that abortion should be banned in its entirety, no matter what the circumstance.
Right.
So you've got it. That is right there is the most telling thing that I think we need to talk about with pro-lifers is the discrepancy between people talking the talk and walking the walk.
Barry, one of the problems is the definition of the words. When people
remember, he who controls the definitions wins the debate.
Wins the debate, yes, exactly. The fact is that when we have talked to people who have been involved. You and I have been involved in the pro-life thing for many years. What you find out is this is sort of like the evolution debate. You flip the meaning of the words to meet your argument, especially if you're pro-evolution and pro-abortion. What do we mean by abortion? If treatment is given to a patient who is pregnant, and the unfortunately the treatment to save the life of the mother would kill the baby, that's not an abortion.
No, it's not.
That is a an attempt to save both lives that fails, and one dies and one lives. That is not a deliberate saying, well, I can't live with this child inside me, and therefore we have to kill the child and then take the treatment. That's not what we're talking about. That's not an abortion. One of the things that people who say they don't want to ban it, they're afraid of this life of the mother thing. That's the whole point. Treatment for illness that kills the baby inadvertently is not an abortion.
In law, it's not an abortion.
Exactly.
So.
You don't need that protection, because what it does is it opens a legal loophole where some judge will come up and make the word say something they don't say. So if you leave it stand, could there be legal trouble? Yeah, there could. This is also I have always had major trouble with the rape and incest exception, and I can remember people coming in and arguing with me when I was a lab manager at Michigan State University. I worked in a laboratory. I was the lab manager, and I'd have discussions with my employees, and I can remember one of them said, "What about rape and incest?" And I said, "Why would you want to apply the death penalty to one of the victims?" And she looked at me and she goes,
"That's a legitimate question.
I never thought of it that way." And I said, "That's right. You didn't. Why? You weren't allowed to think about it that way. That particular argument was not allowed. It wasn't permitted. Flat out. This is the problem we get into. So when you see those statistics and they don't seem to line up, it's because partly, at least, it's schizophrenia in the people that are being questioned. And second of all is they don't understand the definitions of the words.
True.
So there's my little point. And yeah, so, since you asked, I did catch that earlier. I said,
but I think that particularly is a point that we have to like really hammer home. In this, because again, that poll is very instructive. If 43% of the public believe that life begins at conception,
yeah,
and only 10% believe that abortion should not be allowed in any circumstances, what we're saying is that, and assuming that 10% comes from that 43%, that 33% of people who believe life begins at conception are yeah buts.
They're yeah buts. That's exactly right.
They're yeah buts because they're saying, yeah, but,
yeah,
you know, if the woman's life's in danger, yeah, but if it's an ectopic pregnancy, yeah, but if there's fetal abnormalities, yeah, but if the baby has Down syndrome, well, yeah, but.
This is the libertarian streak coming out. I want to be able to do it if I absolutely have to.
And instead of a death by a thousand cuts, we have death by a thousand butts.
Yes, exactly.
But what we still have at the end of the day for all of these talk the talk pro-lifers is dead babies.
And what is
what we have to start driving home to people. You cannot be schizophrenic in this particular worldview.
And what is God's opinion of those who sacrifice infants for their own purposes?
They're an abomination unto the Lord, and he judges them.
Exactly. And honestly, we are seeing things around us now, because we're being judged for nearly 60 million babies being murdered.
Yes, and I think that probably in our next program, we're going to be talking about one of the, shall we say, cultural declines that we're seeing pretty close to home.
The consequences.
And the consequences,
and
yes.
The consequences and the judgment in action. So, and we are out of time. So, that being said, yeah, you were right. That being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com, where you can go out and comment on our podcast. There is a section in there. You don't have to be registered as a user, and you can make comments on our podcast. There's a little box, and we'd like to hear from you. www.principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.